Today on Inside Utah Politics, Utah has new congressional lines. Find out what the state legislature plans to do now after their map lost its day in court. And Ben McAdams launches a campaign to return to Congress, how he'll navigate what's sure to be a crowded Democratic field. And the longest government shutdown in American history is over, how lawmakers broke the stalemate in Washington, and what's next on the agenda in Congress.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. It was a bombshell ruling, and Utah has a new congressional map since our last show. Judge Diana Gibson found the map passed by lawmakers last month violated the voter-passed anti-gerrymandering rules known as Proposition 4. Now, she struck down Map C and instead approved one of the maps offered by the plaintiffs suing the legislature. Now, that does not mean the legal drama is over by any stretch of the imagination, as court cases will continue. Appeals may be possible as well. Joining me now to break down the legislature's point of view, Candace Perucci. She was the chair of Utah's redistricting committee and a member of House Leadership. Representative, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
Okay, so you heard it there. The judge has ruled that your map, Map C, violated Proposition 4. Do you want to tell me why you believe she got it wrong? Because a lot of the argument I'm hearing right now is she's not allowed to issue a new map, but I haven't heard much on, did she get this ruling right?
So she got the ruling wrong, for sure, and she waited right up until the last minute of 11:41 p.m. on the drop-dead date of November 10th to release her decision. And no, I don't think she got it right. I think that she had an option. If she disagreed with how the maps were created, then she could send it back to the legislature to have us try again. But nothing about this is normal. In fact, this is a major overreach on the part of the judiciary to now become a legislator and pick a map that was drawn by an interest group that does not represent any constituency in Utah. And their experts themselves also had testified to having partisan data as part of the process of creating it in communities of interest. So to me, that map should also be thrown out if that's the basis she's standing on.
When did they say that? Where did they use partisan data?
So if you go back
ruled that your expert had it on the screen, not necessarily used it, but had it on
the
screen.
Sure. So if you go back to the evidentiary hearings, when they're interviewing and talking to the experts for the plaintiffs, they talk about their communities of interest, and they incorporated the communities of interest that the plaintiffs had identified. If you go back and actually look at those, they're clumping people on partisan status. So it'd be as if I said, gosh, gee, that Harriman and Riverton area is a community of interest, while also knowing it's a conservative stronghold. So if you go back in, it's very suspicious.
Okay, that's your opinion. That isn't what the judge said, though.
Sure, but obviously if the judge had taken that into account, she'd have a different outcome here in the decision. And I think what's most important here, even if you were to spend this goes way beyond redistricting. This is a judge who is legislating from the bench and who slow walked this decision. Oral arguments were heard in January of this year. Had she come out with a decision, even while we were in session, we could have saved taxpayer dollars and done the redistricting process then, but she didn't. She kept kicking the can. In June, July, she said, I'm going to have a decision soon. We didn't hear anything, and it wasn't until September we actually got a final decision, and then we had to form quickly a redistricting committee. This isn't Prop 4 either, I would point out. If you wanted Prop 4, you would have hoped for an independent redistricting commission, which there was no time for.
But an independent commission wasn't required after an injunction.
No, if you want Prop 4, so the plaintiffs are saying that we gerrymandered, right? That's their accusation. Then she's looking at it saying, was Prop 4 violated? That's what she's reviewing, right? The statute that was passed with a citizens initiative. Then if that's the case, we should go back and do the Prop 4 of having an independent redistricting commission.
But that's not what the law says. That's my point, is the law says that after an injunction, you don't need to
does not say a plaintiff, a random plaintiff, gets to pick the map for
Utah. Right, but this is the remedy in a case.
Yeah, and I would disagree.
The Supreme Court has upheld that. The Supreme Court has said there needs to be a remedial legal map, otherwise we have no map.
Well, we have to have a map, but she could have, based off legal process, sent it back to us. And we're going to disagree on this because obviously you agree with the judge, but I'm telling you, this is a big day for Utah.
I'm not saying I agree with the judge. I'm saying this is what she's argued.
Sure, and I'm telling you, I think her legal basis is wrong. I would say. And if you look at Article 9, Section 1 of the Utah Constitution, it says clearly that the legislature is responsible for drawing boundaries and districts in our state.
Okay, so let's move on to what happens now. Some in your caucus have floated impeachment. Does the majority leadership in the House support that idea?
You know, there are ongoing discussions right now of all legal options that are on the table. I think what we're listening to right now, as well as our constituents, and I've heard from a lot of people that are really irritated that a judge could just, with a wave of her wand, completely upend Utah politics and redraw our boundaries. And so I've had a lot of emails and texts and messages on social media asking that we impeach her. And all legal options are on the table right now. Of course, we're going to be looking at, would we be moving forward for, say, an emergency stay on the decision? These are all things we're still considering right now. But what I think is important is the bigger issue here of Prop 4 was a statute change. If they wanted to amend the Constitution, they needed to do a constitutional amendment. And so that is why the legislature is so fiercely defending our legislative responsibility and constitutional responsibility to draw the maps moving forward.
Okay,
and
so
had she handled it differently, we could have had the opportunity to move through the legal process. Had she come out with this decision even in September, we would have had more time for appeals and a conversation about what this looks like going into 2026.
Yeah, okay. So you're not taking impeachment off the table. You're saying all legal options are available to you. What does the legislature get out of impeaching her? What is the benefit of that?
So again, I'm not saying that that is something that we are actively doing right now. You've mentioned that that is something that's been put on the table.
Right, but you
will tell you we have very limited tools available to the legislature when we look at separation of powers and checks and balances in place. There are very few things the legislature can do to put a check on the judicial branch when they feel like they have overstepped and not been fair to the process. So that is one of the tools available to us.
You have nominations, you have elections, you have...
You don't have elections of judges. You have retention hearings, but that's not the same as an election. And those aren't us. That's the public, right? So when you're looking at separation of powers, you have very few tools available in the legislature.
You control their budgets. You control when they're nominated.
But that's not actually, if we were to go after their budgets, let's think about that for a minute. What you'd be hurting is everyday Utahns. You would. You'd be hurting the people and the victims who are asking for due process in the courts if you go after their budgets. So realistically, there are very few tools we have available. And this is something we're going to pursue at the state Supreme Court and if we need to at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, that's why I'm asking, what does impeachment do for you?
So it isn't just a political move. This is a serious concern if this judge is now made herself a king on the bench and said, not only do I have she is right to be able to review actions, right? Through, it is her job when someone sues, the judiciary's role, they have judicial review there. However, she is not a lawmaker and she does not have the ability to legislate from the bench, which is what she's essentially done by picking a plaintiff's map, which is an unelected interest group that she's pulled it from.
Yeah, the plaintiffs obviously disagree with that. They're saying that this is the remedy for what happens when the legislature had a chance to draw the compliant map and the judge found that they didn't.
So, and I would just say, of course they would say that because they presented the most gerrymandered map that we've ever seen in Utah. Even people who supported better boundaries have come forward and said, wow, this went too far. I've even seen experts on your own show that say, wow, this is a gerrymandered map.
Yeah,
and if you look, it's packed.
Let's take a look at that map right now. We can see it, that it does create that donut hole in Salt Lake County. Seen some numbers come out that it's plus 24 for Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. That's how people voted in 2024 in this district. You can see District 1 there, that donut hole. We've already seen Democrats coming out to run for it. Ben McAdams will be here in the next segment. But the plaintiffs are arguing that it's not a gerrymander, that it's a natural consequence of political geography. What do you make of that?
How nice for them that they get to say that. That's not true at all. And what they've done is completely disrupted the rural-urban-suburban mix that has been so important to our rural communities. When it comes to federal representation, it is critical that our rural communities have as many lawmakers representing them back in D.C. I mean, the fact that Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the minority party, right out of the bat the next day was congratulating Utah for having an enlightened judge who could correct the legislature speaks to the fact that this is just D.C. politics happening in Utah. It is incredibly gerrymandered, and I think it's almost too liberal of a district for Ben McAdams to be successful in. He's probably too moderate for that district,
so
we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's a question for him. We will see what he says about that. So You haven't really given a timeline for appeals. Is there anything that stops this map from the GOP's perspective from being implemented in 2026?
So again, because of how the judge slow rolled this out, she heard oral arguments in January, but did not give a final decision till November 10th
right,
at 11:40 p.m.
We're in the situation we're in.
Right.
So what does that mean?
So it gives us limited options. And what we're doing now is seeing, can we ask for an emergency stay? We're looking at everything on the table here, but the lieutenant governor has said, you know, this is the timeline she needs to run a successful election next year, and which is why we're working on it, and which is why Utahns should be frustrated. Because in a normal business setting, heck, even in a legislative setting, we have deadlines that mean something. And when we pass legislation, we don't get the chance to say, ah, never mind, guys, we need way past this deadline to give you an answer, even though we're doing lawmaking. But that's what she's done, essentially. She has ate up 9 months of Utahns' time when they could have an opportunity to actually voice their opinion and go through a normal appeals process.
Is there a consideration to push back the filing deadline in January to give candidates more time, potentially more time to appeal since you're in this situation?
That comes with a whole box of complexities, but of course we're looking at everything on the table right now.
Okay, Representative Candace Perucci, anything else you want to add that I didn't ask you?
Just that I hope people will reach out to their lawmakers on this. It is much more than a congressional map. This is much more than redistricting. This is the future of Utah, and we have been a successfully run state because we are respectful of the separation of powers and checks and balances in place. And having a judge who is creating policy from the bench is not healthy, and it's going to make Utah look like California in a very quick way.
We appreciate your perspective today. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
Okay. Coming up still on Inside Utah Politics, Ben McAdams eyeing a return to Congress under this new map. We were just talking about how he plans to navigate what is set to be a crowded field of Utah Democrats.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, welcome back. With that new congressional map in place, Democrats now rushing to campaign for their surest shot at one of Utah's four seats in Congress in decades. Voters in the newly drawn first district went for Kamala Harris by more than 20 points. Now, a familiar face is hoping that shift can propel a return to Washington. Well, I'm joined today by Ben McAdams. He is the latest Democrat to serve in Utah's Congress in 2018. Mr. McAdams, good to be here.
Lindsay,
good
to have you. Thank you.
Do I call you Mr. McAdams? What do I call you? Congressman?
I like
Ben?
To be called Ben.
Okay. I'll call you Ben, but that feels very informal. But we're glad you're here. So you announced your campaign. What motivated you to run this time around?
You know, I grew up in a family where, you know, my mom was a school teacher and hardworking, and we were always struggling to pay the bills. You know, I remember times when I was a kid that the electricity was turned off because we couldn't make ends meet, that struggling to put food on the table. My mother had Crohn's disease and my sister was a type 1 diabetic, so we know what medical bills can do to family finances. And I look at the state of our country right now. People are really struggling. It reminds me of some of the financial insecurity that I experienced as a kid. People are working hard, two incomes at home. People wages can't buy groceries that put food on the table. People can't afford a roof over their heads, and they're afraid of opening a medical bill. And people are really struggling. And so I look at the state that our country's in, and I have never been more worried than I am right now. And I believe it's time to get off the sidelines. And if you know, as I've thought about it, and I've seen really what's happened over the last year that is really troubling to me, if I can do something about it, I'm getting off the sidelines and I'm going to get in and I'm going to make a difference.
Were you planning to run before you found out which map was going to be Utah's map?
You know, I was watching the Better Boundaries process play out. I was not involved with that, but I know there are people like me who are frustrated that feels like the boundaries that the legislature have drawn has been manipulated to deny people their vote, to deny people a voice. And so excited to see really the prospects of fair boundaries coming about right now. But what really is motivating me is the families that I see that are struggling, the people who are working so hard to put food on the table and to make ends meet, and they just can't afford the basic necessities of life. So that's what's motivating me, is the opportunity to get in and to make a difference.
Are these congressional lines fair? Because some are arguing right now that we swapped one gerrymander for a different gerrymander.
Yeah. You know, I don't think politicians should be choosing who their voters are. I think voters should choose who they want to have represent them. So this is the map that the process yielded. And, you know, and I'm running to earn the support of voters in the district.
So District 1 is where you're running. I think we're showing that right now, which is that little teeny tiny donut hole in the middle of Salt Lake County. You've represented Salt Lake County before as the mayor for a long time. I want to take us back to 2022 in that Senate race between Mike Lee and Evan McMullen. You endorse Evan McMullen. He was an independent in the race. You got a lot of flack for that. It didn't turn out the way you had hoped. Do you have some ground to make up with Democrats here?
You know, I still stand by the fact that Evan McMullen was the better candidate to go up against Mike Lee. I don't think Mike Lee is a good voice for Utah, and I wanted to put forward someone who had the chance of beating him. And what we saw was Evan McMullen came within 10 points. We haven't seen a Democrat on the statewide race come within 10 points in my lifetime. So, you know, I people have different opinions. I respect Democrats who don't think that was the right choice. What I saw from that race is Mike Lee had to work. He had to talk to voters. He had to campaign. He ultimately ended up winning. But I think that was a competitive election that put Utah on the map and held him accountable. And what I also saw is it brought out hundreds of volunteers, a lot of energy that you just don't see in a race where we know from day one that the Democrat's going to lose by 45%.
Do you regret that decision at all?
No, I think Democrats need a bigger tent. We need to bring in, if we're going to make a difference in Utah, we need to bring in more people into our coalition. And I feel a real responsibility to grow that tent. I know the people who are struggling to put food on the table, to pay for a home, to access health care. And if we want to make a difference for those people who are relying on us to step up, we have to have a bigger tent. We have to have a bigger coalition so we can impact the dialogue and make a difference.
Some politicos are saying with a plus 24 Harris district in district one that you are almost too moderate for that district. What do you say to that?
You know, that's such whiplash. I am who I am. I have represented this district for most of my political career. So I would remind people that I am somebody who I fight, I stand up for what I believe in, and I win. Look at from the beginnings of my political career, standing up to fight for LGBT equality when that was difficult. And I led the charge for Utah's non-discrimination laws, and which is now state law. And we see anti-discrimination protections now passed at the federal level, in part modeled on what happened here in Utah. So I was part of that change that made a real difference for people. I've worked to reform our homeless services system. That is a hard and heavy lift. I've worked to bring down the cost of housing and done so many things. And so, you know, it's one thing to fight for fighting's sake, to send off a tweet that's a zinger. It takes a different level of leadership and experience to actually have an impact and make a difference. And so what I'm going to be asking voters, reminding them the wins that I've had that have made their lives better and made our communities better. What I think really matters is electing leaders who can have an impact. Anybody can fight for fighting's sake.
Let's talk about some of the issues that Congress is dealing with right now. The government just reopened this week, right? Who do you blame for the shutdown?
Look, I will say this. I will never vote for legislation that doesn't address the high cost of health care. This is personal for me. As I mentioned, my mother had Crohn's disease, and my sister is a type 1 diabetic. We know how the burden that high cost of medical care and the fear of pre-existing conditions, the impact that can have on a family. So it's personal for me. I'll never vote for legislation that doesn't, for a budget that doesn't address the high cost of health care.
So when that bill came back to the House, you wouldn't have supported it?
No.
Interesting. Okay, so affordability issues are huge here in Utah between housing, between inflation, the cost of groceries. What is Congress's role in bringing those down, and how do you help that?
I think the first thing is standing up to Donald Trump and his tariffs. Those tariffs are a direct sales tax on food that families are trying to put on their tables. So we've got to stand up to these unconstitutional tariffs to bring down the price of groceries to families that are struggling to feed their kids. The cost of housing, again, tariffs are affecting the cost of housing construction. In the last 5 years, I've been working with cities across the country to help them enact other solutions to bring down the cost of housing. So this is something that I've worked on in government and in the private sector. Those are both things that I'll take to Washington to fight for Utah families.
Your new district, District 1, doesn't appear to have any federal lands in it. Is that accurate? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think there are federal lands up in the Wasatch, the central Wasatch.
Okay. Okay. So part of the legislature's argument has always been that pizza pie slice, right? Which is, a little bit of urban, a little bit of rural in each district, as opposed to this donut hole. And that argument is, well, our congressional delegation works on federal lands issues all the time. How do you do that if you don't have, as much of those in your district?
Yeah. You know, these are the maps that this process yielded. I don't have an opinion about the maps, but, I am I'm a voice for Utah, and I do have strong opinions about our public lands. Since I've left Congress, me and my son have picked up mountain biking. We love to get out and enjoy our public lands. So I will... I hope to be continue to be a voice on the stewardship of Utah's public lands and how we can best protect those for future generations.
Do you support the idea? A lot of Republicans want to wrest some of those lands back from the federal government to be in Utah's control.
You know, there are some lands that make sense to be in local control and other lands that are should be protected forever. And so I think that's I'm going to approach this like I did when I was mayor and we were looking at the Central Wasatch and we're pushing for federal protections about some of those lands. But there are other lands that we were wanting to get into local control so they could be mountain biking and hiking trails and other things. So this is something that requires a dialogue. I think the best decisions are going to start locally. But for me, I'm going to start from a place of conservation. I'm a Boy Scout. I take my kids, we hike and we camp and we love Utah's public lands. And so I'm going to start from a perspective of conservation. But I think these are local decisions that we're going to engage in and try and find the best solution that works for Utah.
How do you work with the other members of the delegation, presuming that all three of them are Republicans?
Look, I'm a Utahan first. And this is how I've been in my entire political career. You know, I'm a state senator. I'm somebody who fights for what I believe in, takes tough positions, but then works to make the positions that are tough, to get them into law and to make a difference for my constituents. So things have never been easy for me as a state senator, as a mayor, and as a member of Congress, but I'm somebody who's going to work to build coalitions, to enact the solutions that are important for the people I represent. But I also note that I'm not afraid to stand alone, like I did when I voted to impeach Donald Trump, because I believe, I have a moral conviction that that was the right thing to do. And I stood alone knowing that that would probably cost me my reelection, and it did, but I'm somebody who, we'll work to build coalitions to put solutions in place, but I'm not afraid to stand alone. I'll have the courage to stand for my convictions.
We're going to have to leave it there. Ben McAdams, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Good luck in the race. You'll have stiff competition because there will be a ton of Democrats who will run in this district. All right, coming up still on Inside Utah Politics, the government shutdown has come to an end as we were talking about what's next on the agenda in Washington and how soon another shutdown could come. Stay with us. After 43 days, the longest government shutdown in U.S. history is officially over. President Donald Trump signed the short-term spending bill late Wednesday night. It passed the House by a vote margin of 222 to 209. All but six Democrats voted against it, raising the alarm on a key health care issue. Now, two Republicans also voted against the bill. Republican leadership is highlighting their steadfastness in the face of Democratic demands for more health care spending.
Today, we're sending a clear message that we will never give in to extortion, because that's what it was.
I want to say that all this was utterly pointless and foolish. This outcome was totally foreseeable. I said that this would be the outcome when all this began back in mid-September.
Well, Democrats who voted against the bill were pushing to extend Obamacare tax credits set to expire at the end of the year. And when they do, health insurance premiums for millions of Americans are set to skyrocket. Now, Senate Republicans have promised to vote on those subsidies in December. The House has made no such promise.
It's a betrayal of working people who are seeing their health insurance premiums rise double and triple.
Well, the bill funds the government until January, extends funding for SNAP and the VA until September, restores shutdown firings, and guarantees furloughed employees get back pay. In the meantime, the House could vote as soon as this week on releasing the full Epstein files. Now, it comes after a newly sworn-in Democratic congresswoman gave the final signature needed for a petition to force that vote. Well, now to this, Utah State University's new president shares his plans to navigate the legislature's changes to higher education funding. Brad Mortensen took over in Logan just this past week. He tells ABC4 that securing that $12 million held by the state due to House Bill 265 is his top priority.
Utah State is the one school that is still waiting for final approval from the legislature to have that funding returned to us. So that's one of my big tasks right out of the gate, is to make sure that I understand what's in that plan, if there are any concerns or adjustments that we need to make to seek that final approval from the legislature. And I'm hopeful in the first 60 days that we'll be able to navigate that and have that $12 million restored to Utah State's budget, and that then we can get into the 2026 legislative session and be partners with the legislature and talk about the investments that we need for Utah State to be successful in the future and continue to make sure that we're stewarding the state resources effectively, which was the whole goal behind House Bill 265.
Well, we also asked Mortensen about how he's approaching the challenge of being the school's third president in 3 years and confronting a history of Title IX violations. Now, you can catch that full interview with our Sarah Murphy on News 4 Utah. Plus, scan that QR code you see on your screen. Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Stay in touch with us on social media, please. You can find me on X, Threads, and Instagram with Lindsay on air. Lindsay spelled with an A. You can also just find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out our political power ranker. This is our Nextdoor national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling, who looks at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. We carry that for you and more IUP analysis on our free streaming app, News 4 Utah Plus. You can download that on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. Well, thanks for joining us this week. We will see you next week.